Encuentro Radio es periodismo, derechos, igualdad, dignidad, mujeres, inclusión, masculinidad, arte, expresión, libertad, esperanza, cultura, ecumenismo, literatura, historia y análisis. Pero en realidad somos una gran familia. Bienvenidos y bienvenidas a Encuentro Radio. No te despegues de nuestra programación. Sigue con Encuentro Radio. Comunícate con nosotros a través de nuestro WhatsApp 302-521-2342.
4, 3, 2, 1. Welcome to Open Space Conversations. This radio program is brought to you by Global Mission Fellows,
a community dedicated to amplifying the voices and stories of diverse communities around the world.
We will be diving into important social justice issues of our time, exploring the ways that they intersect with beliefs, science, technology, and the environment.
Aiming to open spaces to have conversations about critical issues that are shaping our world today and working toward solutions to create a more equitable and just world for all.
From climate change, education, gender justice, health, and food security, in this space, you're welcome. In this conversation, your voice is heard.
Tune in to our special episodes Wednesdays at 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time and through podcast version of CIPOC and Encuentro Radio.
Greetings, everyone. Confirm you can hear me.
Yes, I can hear you, Tanaka, of course.
Yes, I can hear you.
Thank you so much, colleagues. Welcome to yet another episode of the Open Spaces, which is being hosted by the 2023 to 2024 cohort of Global Mission Fellows. This is a very, very critical and important session, which helps us to unpack critical issues which are of paramount importance for us in communities. So without further ado, My name is Tanaka Ndongera, and I'll be your host for today. I'm going to give this time to our panelists to introduce themselves. Then from there, we'll dig deep on the topic at hand. We were discussing climate resilience and just transition for the Global South, especially after the COP29 just finished last week in Baku, Azerbaijan. Our panelists, over to you for introduction.
Thank you very much, Tanaka. My name is Tapiwa Prosper Jimbazwa, a Global Mission Fellow serving in Sierra Leone as an environmental advocate, working along the lines of climate change resilience building and also policy advocacy. So I'm happy to be here.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
Okay. My name is Thomas Funyan Kajal. I'm a Global Mission Fellow serving in Angola as an agriculture assistant. So I'm working with West Angolan Annual Conference in different agriculture activities and some projects which are going on here. Thank you.
Hi, everybody, my name is Anyero Josias. I am from Ivory Coast, and so I am a GMF, Global Missionary Fellow. I serve in Zambia in the domain of education, and so I'm very happy to be here and discuss about climate. Thank you.
Thank you so much, colleagues. Dropped a bit. As you can see that today it's a very, very important topic, and it requires all of us to discuss and put it across. So without wasting much of our time, I will give this time to Josias to give us an entry on what is climate change and how does it lead to climate resilience. Over to you, Josias.
Thank you, Tanaka. Thank you to give me the opportunity to talk about climate. And so I think that climate change refers to the— Everybody can hear me?
Loud and clear.
Hello? Okay, good. I was saying climate change refers to the long-term warming of the planet due to an increase in the average global temperatures. We can see in a lot of countries and lot of cities in Africa, in Europe, in Asia, you can see the changement of some climate. And we can have lot of consequences, And also we can say that this is primarily caused by human activity that release greenhouse gases such as carbon dioxide and methane into the atmosphere. And it means that our activities every day, even the industry, even the farmers' activities can contribute to destroy our climate. and contribute to change how climate is the last thing I want to say to start. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Josias, for breaking the ice to take us through what really, you know, climate change is and the culmination of what causes climate change. And you can attest that this is caused by human activities and mostly the greenhouse gases which are in the atmosphere. And once in a while, all of us, sometimes we do have contribution towards climate change. So then it gives us now the pathway to the clarion call to understand, like, why should everyone be involved in climate change affairs? Because this is a very, very critical issue, because either way you are affected, either way you also contribute. But now let us take it to the next level. We are going to have a song. Then after that, we are going to bring Thomas, who's going to take us from climate change, climate justice, into climate resilience. We are going to have a break and a song.
I see trees of green, red roses too. I see them bloom for me and you. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world. I see skies of blue and clouds of white. The bright blessed day, the dark sacred night. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world. The colors of the rainbow, so pretty in the sky, are also on the faces of people going by. I see friends shaking hands, saying, how do you do? They're really saying, I love you. I hear babies cry. Them grow, they learn much more than I ever knew. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world. Yes, I think to myself.
Thank you so much, colleagues, once again. For those who are just joining us, welcome to our open space, which is being hosted today by myself, Tanaka, a Global Mission Fellow within the Corps 2023 to 2025. So earlier on, we had Josias, who was taking us through what is climate change, how does it come to be, what are the causes, and he laid the ground for this conversation. And now we're taking it to the next level, where we are going to invite Thomas, who's going to take us through, from climate change, we talk of now climate justice and climate resilience. And also he will share his own story from what he's currently doing in Angola in an effort to build climate resilience for Global South countries. And mostly these are countries which have been devastated by the effects of climate change. Over to you, Thomas.
Okay, thank you so much, Tanaka. As Tanaka said, my name is Thomas. I'm from Malawi, and now I'm in Angola, serving as a Global Mission Fellow and working with West Angolan Annual Conference as an agriculture assistant. Climate change first is one of the biggest challenges, which is causing a lot of problems to humanity, and also most affecting the agriculture department as a side which I'm focusing much. As Josiah said, climate change is mostly focus on the change in temperature and weather patterns. So yes, Josiah explained a lot of causes, but also add some causes which has bring us here to the climate change challenge. Some of the causes we are talking about deforestation, like for the part of agriculture, we're talking of deforestation, where people cut down trees with the reasons of maybe introducing a farm, where they cut forests to introduce farms. Some of the cut forests, cut trees, maybe for construction purposes, to build houses and to make it as a residential park. Some causes we're talking about industrial things, where just as already said, where it reduces gases which destroys our ozone layer. For me, let me focus much on deforestation, since that's the part of my work. Like here in Angola, I experience a lot of challenges, which is causing climate change. This issue of deforestation has been a very big part here, mostly in the upper city, the city where I'm living, is the capital city of Angola, which is Luanda. A lot of areas, they don't have trees. If you move around, you see a lot of areas without trees. And if you see the causative part, mostly it's the residential purposes. People cut trees to introduce their homes, because Luanda is one of the biggest cities with a lot of population. So trees have been destructed with the reason of building houses, making some forest areas to be residential areas. Also, the issue of charcoal burning here in Angola. You know, yes, in Angola we have modern electricity technology, like energy technologies, where cooking is not focusing much on the charcoal, but with the population, not everyone is able to access the modern techniques of energy. So some, they are used to charcoal. So you find some areas where they practice charcoal burning, cutting the trees, sending them to the city, sending charcoals to the city, and at the same time, leaving the area ground, the ground empty or bare without any trees. So when the rain comes, that's when we'll be experiencing the floods, and even the soil now is being erosioned, where a lot of fertility is going away, and we can now see that even the production now of that productivity is now going down, like going low. This issue of deforestation has caused a lot of challenges in agriculture. Because now we're talking about Angola is one of the countries which believes in buying food, agriculture commodities from outside the country. But if you see, they have a lot of space, they have a lot of land. But it's because the land now has lost its fertility. Because of deforestation, the land pattern has changed. Everything now is a challenge for them to access agriculture. So yes, climate change is one of the biggest challenges. So let's see what things which we can do to reduce this climate change. Because when we're talking about climate resilience, it's like being now ready to look for ways which we can do to avoid climate change challenges. So one of the things which is happening now, as I said, for the deforestation challenge, it's better to encourage and practice afforestation, whereby we can try to have areas where we can plant a lot of trees, because you'll find places, you have a lot of places, no one is living there, but there are no trees there. So if we start practicing afforestation, this can also reduce climate change challenges. I'll give you an example of one of the areas where I work, where we have a farm there. Last year, or this year area, they experienced floods where houses were being destroyed because of the heavy rains and the floods which happened to that site. Because of this challenge which I said, there's no trees which can hold water, so the running water were running into the location, the residential area, and causing a lot of challenges in those residential areas. So they experienced floods. We're talking about some small farmers who planted agriculture, they lost their crops because of floods. So if we practice afforestation will help us to hold this water, the speed of water, not to affect the residential area. And also there's a need for civic educating people when we're talking about allocating themselves to where they want to be staying. Because we can see this area, it is close to a river where if the floods come in, now the water are going to where these people are staying. So there's a need of civic educating these people when it comes to where they want to allocate themselves, where they want to be staying. They should not stay closer to the river or where it's at least the area for climate change challenges. I'll also give you an example of a challenge which we had in Malawi. We had a cyclone Freddy was one of the cyclones which affected Malawi mostly. So we lost a lot of people. Almost 700 people were died due to this cyclone flood, which is coming due to the challenges of climate change. So you see a lot of people who lost their lives. There are people who located themselves near the hill areas, some near the shore areas. So it is also the duty of us who, people who has knowledge in climate change challenges, that we should specifically educate these people to allocate themselves in a place where it's not risky for the climate change challenges. Also, even the buildings, we need to promote good building infrastructures, whereby we should build strong houses, build strong infrastructures, which can be able to stand against any climate change challenge, just to pass through. So those are the things which we can get prepared for as a process of climate resilience, being able to see how we can address or how we can defend ourselves from climate change. Because we just have to look for mitigation measures. We cannot completely stop climate change, but we just have to look for mitigation measures, how we can reduce or avoid the effect of climate change. Yeah, for now I can stop there. You also give me time if you want me to add something else. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Thomas. That was quite elaborate, and I like how you have picked it up from Josias, you know, to connect now the dots, you know, from the causes as well as the effects of climate change. and also touching very, very clearly from, you know, the effects, what people are doing in communities, is what has been spoken earlier on by Josias in terms of now the effects, because, you know, a lot of human activities, they're also contributing to the climate change, and now people cutting down trees, and now we are also now joining hands in what you are doing specifically in Angola. And also you spoke about even the floods. Now when people even cut down trees, when now water comes, sometimes, you know, then have that trip effect. So you can see sometimes human induced what can I say, in terms of human activities themselves, they're also having an effect. And surely Malawi has been on the radar in terms of one of the most vulnerable countries which has been affected by climate change. And we saw what happened from Cyclone Idai, which also affected Zimbabwe, and Cyclone Freddy, which was very, very devastating last year. And now the solutions in terms of the resilience, what people need to do, and understand that whatever we do, we need to take care of our environment. You need to make sure that we are doing the best, because if we don't do the best, you know, it will affect us. It is affecting us, so we have a role to play. And the small things which you can do in terms of the resilience, I like how you mentioned the planting of trees. And I'm happy that here in Kenya, the president launched an initiative to plant, you know, 15 billion trees by 2032. And even with PAGJA, we also launched the project called Terra Fund Africa in West Pokot, a community in Kenya, where we are restoring forest, and that community has been affected by landslides in an effort, you know, to play our part towards climate change. So that was quite elaborate. And thank you so much, Thomas. For all those who have questions, just put them in the chat box. We'll pick them from there, and I'll speak out the questions so that the panelists can be able to answer the questions. So at this point, I will invite the music as we take a break. Then after that, we'll bring Lois, who is going to be the next speaker.
Straight from inside,
I'm waking up, I feel it.
Thank you so much once again for the music, which is very, very nice. I was just going through some comments which are being put. We need to recognize Kenny, who is watching from Hong Kong. Thank you so much for joining. We have Blessing joining from Kenya. Thank you so much. We have Sandra watching from Cambodia. Thank you so much. Mamei Sombo is watching. Honest, thank you so much. We are so much grateful for you joining. So now we're going to invite our third speaker, who is Lois Lubanya Josiah, who is going to speak on gender advocacy as well as communication, in as much we are speaking of resilience, but how then do we put our message across so that people understand how climate change is affecting the communities and what needs to be done. So Lois is going to speak on gender, also the gender aspect, which is enshrined within the climate perspective, and also how we then package our message towards advocacy and communication. Over to you, Lois.
Hello, everyone. As Tanaka have said, good afternoon, good evening, good morning, wherever you are watching from. I'm actually excited to be here and to discuss about gender biodiversity and how it is affecting our climate today. So I would like to start on how do actually gender and diversity relate to mine action. How do gender and diversity relate to mine action? So I believe that a lot of us here, even if we did not experience the war, I believe that most of us here have heard about wars in so many countries and how it is affecting our community in which we stay today. So how does gender come in? But before going to that, I actually want to try to give you an understanding of what actually mine action is. So according to the research that I did, I found out that mine action actually refers to the activities that reduce social, economic, and environmental impact of landmines, unexploded ordnance, and explosive remnants of war. So like I said before, maybe if you have not ever experienced war, you have probably heard about wars. And you know, during this war, there are explosives, and people actually don't know where and where these explosives are hidden. And so it is very important for us to be aware of this. So some of the activities that actually lead to this is survey. When we say we are going to do a survey, or when we say we are going to do a clearance, and also in terms of teaching people about risk education and victim assistance. So why is gender and diversity matter in mine action, in our climate world today? Like, why is it really important, gender and diversity? So, you know, in so many places, in conflict-affected areas, these landmines actually pose a threat to civilians, and a lot of them go through a lot in terms of they don't know where these explosives are and might likely fall into the trap and get exploded. So it is very important for groups such as women, girls, the disability to come together to actually try to see how best they can be able to protect the environment. Because if we say that we are doing these surveys and clearance of landmines, and we are not including the women, young girls, and people with disability to this particular action, then it will not be fruitful. So, you know, for example, in so many cultures, men and women have different access to information. And so, Why is it that that is supposed to happen? It is supposed to, women and men should have access to equal information. At that time, it will actually help them to understand what is happening in their community. People with disability are actually the worst when it comes to these things because they face a lot of challenges in terms of some of them don't walk, some of them don't see, and they might literally fall into these traps. And so it is very important for us to incorporate this gender and diversity in whatsoever surveys or clearance that is happening in our community in order for us to get a protective environment or a protected environment. So now, the link between the gender and diversity with survey clearance, what is this actually talking about? It is talking about that, like I said before, surveys and clearance starts when people actually tend to talk about it. Women most times stay at home. They know exactly the places that are dangerous. They know the places that are prone to disaster and might actually protect the children or other people from going or falling into these traps. So it is very important that we include them in whatsoever we are doing. Children as well. In schools, it's very important because some of them are very curious and might sometimes dig up these landmines, which may actually affect them in the future or affect the whole community. So in that particular thought, it is very important for us to actually include these people. Because when I did also a research, I came to understand that a study in Jordan shows that when it comes to mapping of the areas that are really dangerous in our community, women and girls contribute more than even men. Some men don't even have access, they don't even know about these things. Only women and girls have access, know about these things because they are actually aware. They are the ones that stay home. They are the ones that live within the community. So it is very important for us to include them. How can we actually do this in order for us to have a protected environment? We can actually do a gender communication. That is by talking to the genders. Like, for example, women talking to women. It is very important. Women actually listen more to their fellow women, and likewise the men. So it is very important for us to know about this in terms of breaking the barriers when it comes to us protecting our environment. And also we should make sure that children should learn about this explosive ordnance risk education. It will actually help them. It will actually protect them from the dangers of our community and what places we should avoid, and also bring up actions that will be able to protect them in our community. So another thing also is empowering women in this particular community and employing them in such areas. When it comes to surveys, clearance, and protecting our community, when you empower women, they will be the backbone of this project because they actually tend to take the lead when it comes to protecting their environment because they are talking about how they can protect the food, how they can protect agriculture, how they can protect their children. And so if they are employed in these particular areas, they will be able to take up this responsibility and they will be able to give in their best to make sure that the environment is actually safe for everyone. So without wasting much time, I would just want to end with saying that it is very important for us to include mine actual explosive education in whatsoever we are doing, and also try to include women and girls in whatever decision we are taking in the community, because they are the ones that are really affected by this climate injustice. They are the ones that are vulnerable. So we need to actually try to bring up policies that actually speak to the inclusion of women and girls so that they will be able to, like, be empowered and also find ways in which they can be able to protect the society from harm. So that's my humble take. Tanaka, I think I can stop there for now.
Thank you so much, Lois, for quite an elaborate presentation, or rather submission. And I like how you've brought the gender lens within climate justice and climate change itself, and also now giving us the linkage of climate change and mine action, and where we've seen that mostly women and young girls have been affected by landmines, and also within climate change. And you'll find that in those areas, once such circumstances happen, women and young girls, they are mostly affected. And some of the land which they're supposed to do agriculture and farming is affected. And then it then culminates to food security issue. And then it also talks about, you know, the climate resilience, which you're talking about. So you can see the interlinkage and how girls need to be protected, and also to be given extra care, because they are very vulnerable to climate change and these adverse impacts. And we are so much grateful, because this is a very, very, very critical area which we often overlook sometimes, because we just take things lightly. But women and girls, you know, they are very vulnerable, and they are affected mostly in terms of even displacement. When you see when floods happen, we had floods in Kenya earlier this year in April. You see how women and girls were affected. So that was quite an elaborate presentation. But before we ever break in the song, there's a question from Kenny, which was in the chat. Kenny is asking, how can we ensure that climate resilience building efforts are inclusive, equitable, promoting a just transition for vulnerable communities affected by climate change? So I can invite Josias or Thomas or Lois to respond to the question, or any panelist. Then once we have the response, we can then have a break and invite Tapua, our next speaker. Anyone would want to answer the question, or I can put it in the chat box. Then meanwhile, we can have a break and a song. Then I'll put it in the chat box so that our panelists can read the question. Let's have some music.
Magic.
Thank you so much for the great music. So I will now invite our last speaker, which is Tapiwa Prosper Chimbazwa, to take us through how climate finance is very important as we move into the just transition as the Global South countries, and most importantly, what needs to be done. I understand that for the past 2 weeks, people were in Baku, Azerbaijan, and the output and outcomes of the COP29 didn't please mostly the Global South countries. What do we need to do in such circumstances as we are talking about climate resilience and just transition? Over to you, Tapiwa.
Thank you very much, Tanaka. So I'll try to be very, very quick in terms of dissecting this key issue. And I think Kenny rose a very interesting question on how best can we put across issues of equality when it comes to pushing for the just transition. And it's very sad, truth be told, that it's a bit gloomy. I'm not actually seeing a just transition in given how things are moving, the direction that things are moving in terms of the international forum when it comes to discussing issues about around climate change. So I would say that I think from everyone who was explaining the climate change calamity and how it unfolds, there is a very key component to it, and especially for the Global South, which has economies that are really struggling. It's very hard now to build the resilience that is being anticipated, because you can see that most African countries, especially in the sub-Saharan countries, their economies are not stable due to a number of issues, social political issues. And you can see that annually they need something like, by 2023, they needed something like $96 billion annually for adaptation. And the projection are expected to rise to around $579 billion by 2030 and $845 billion by 2035, right? These are just financial projections of how it's going to be worse for economies that are struggling. Yet if you look at the financial support system that are being put in place, especially the newly quantified collective goal on climate change, climate finance that was being discussed in COP29, you can see that the expectation was to have a quantum of $1.3 trillion by 2030, which was going to be done per year. But what became the outcome is even way, way lesser than what's expected, and it's even way, way lesser than the projection, because come to think of it, people need 579 and they're giving 300. They are already at the shortfall. So you'd see that climate finance plays a very critical role in responding to this, especially in the African continent where economies are struggling and countries don't have the capacity to respond. Because trust me, if you need to do better agricultural projects, there's need to build better infrastructure. And for that better infrastructure to happen, it needs finance. And that's the finance that is missing. And given that the Paris Agreement clearly states that within the area of common but shared but differentiated responsibilities, that you know these countries in the Global South, they have a responsibility that is different from those who are in the Global North, and the Global North are historically responsible for causing the climate change calamity, and while the Global South is facing the consequences of this issue. So you can see that given this discrepancy, there is now need for the developed countries to commit to pay down, but this is not happening. So without those financial supports now, it gets very hard for the economies in the Global South to actually respond. And like what Lois was saying, some of the countries within the Global South, they are recovering from wars. That's post-conflict zones, and they have also landmine issues that are taking place in their countries and other things. And landmines affect the agricultural lands and so many things. So food security threatened, even the peace of those countries is threatened, and the resources are shrinking day in, day out. And for us to get out of this situation, there is need for better financial support to put the infrastructure that's needed for countries to respond to disasters, for countries to respond to create solid adaptation and mitigation projects. So you would see that for a just transition to take place, there is need for finance to be first put into place so that all those ambitious goals are then followed up by action. Because if we have documents of strategies but without proper resources, then we are not going anywhere. Because you can come to think of that the NDC 3.0, they are already like as good as out by now, but they need to be implemented. And how are they going to be implemented? Because you can see that in Kenya, there was now the JNZ protest that is very popular, and you can see it's related to issues around finance, the economy crumbling, and the country trying to balance off things. And now trying to think of that country trying to balance off things, also trying to move their budget towards adaptation, funding for adaptation. What is going to happen to the economy? So there is really, really need to push and think about finance when it comes to pushing for the just transition. And there is need for us as young people to be at the center of advocating for increase of adaptation finance, especially for the vulnerable communities. So I think without saying a lot, I'll end here and then I'll attend to questions.
Thank you so much, Tapua. You know, that was very, very critical, in as much we're talking about climate resilience in itself into just transition for the Global South. And these are the just issues which we stand for, and these are critical issues which we need to take care of. And if we don't take care of these issues, we'll be doing injustice to ourselves and to the communities and to a lot of people who look up to us. So it's very important that we take cognizance of these very, very important issues. And I like that before jumping into the topic, you managed to touch through the question for Kenny. I'm sure, Kenny, you are impressed and happy by the response given. And I don't see any other questions within the comment section here, but I'm happy that you have touched on how climate finance is a vehicle to just transition. And without climate finance itself, it will be very hard for us as Africans and Global South entirely to have just transition. And we need to take heed of climate finance towards just transition, where we are talking about renewable energy, and also we are talking of the transfer of technology, so that we copy up and we are able to harness the God-given resources, especially sun, towards, you know, solar energy, and also we're talking about wind energy. And I can see that Kenny, you have confirmed that the explanation was well put. Thank you so much, Kenny, for the confirmation, and thank you so much, Tapua, for answering that question. And I'm just giving 30 seconds to each speaker. Your last words, Josias. 30 seconds, Josias. Your parting words, 30 seconds.
Thank you, Tanaka. Thank you. I just want to say that climate change is a everybody problem, and it's an important issues we have to resolve. We have to resolve with our behavior as a human, because this world is for us. And now, if our activities and also in the industry, what we are doing is not perfect, we can destroy our world. And also, I want to say that it's very important for the people to be resilient in this situation of climate change. For example, here in Zambia, we have a challenge, a lot of challenges of power. And
thank you so much. 30 seconds done. Thomas, 30 seconds. Time is running out. Thomas, 30 seconds. Okay. Your last words.
Thank you so much, Tanaka. I will start saying by saying a say which says,
a better tomorrow, everyone is responsible for his or her better tomorrow. So I think everyone should be responsible for what climate change next will be. We should be responsible. Everyone should be responsible. Let's not wait for government officials. Let's not wait for someone else to come to tell us that we are responsible for the climate change. So it's a request. It's a plea to everyone that everyone should be responsible for the better tomorrow of ours when we are looking at, on climate change. Yeah, thank you.
Thank you so much, Thomas. Lois, 20 seconds.
Okay, I'll be quick. So in all of this that we are doing, it just boils down to that everyone should be involved. Whether you're a woman, man, persons with disability, for the climate to actually, for climate justice to be achieved, and in order for us to survive in the climate world, in our world today, we just have to include these people because they play a critical role in every decision that we make in terms of climate justice.
Thank you so much, Tapiwa. 10 seconds.
So I can say that climate resilience building is an impossibility without proper funding and also energy. So there is need for us as young people to lobby for political will and support when it comes to the provision of climate finance to respond to the climate change calamity for us to see a just transition. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Tapiwa. I would like to thank you, all panelists, to thank Sepok and Trend, the radio for providing us with music, and for our host, Hannah, for handling the tech support. Guys, you are so much amazing. And to our viewers, everyone, you have a role to play, and let's keep pushing. A journey of 1,000 miles starts with one step, and let's spread the message. And thank you so much, Sandra. You love the discussion. We appreciate the comment. And thank you so much, guys. We are so much grateful. And a comment from GMF, it seems a good time keeper. Thank you so much. And we are so much grateful, guys. And let's play our part. This is our planet. We only have planet A, which is Earth, no other planet. So thank you so much. And enjoy the rest of your day, your evening. Wherever you are, God bless you. Bye. Music as we live.
Oh, mercy, mercy me. All things and what they used to belong.